This is tape recording number 5703C14ACC. A lecture by L. Ron Hubbard from the 17th Advanced Clinical Course, entitled Summary of an Intensive. Copyright by L. Ron Hubbard, 1957, with all world rights reserved.
And this is the 14th lecture of the 17th ACC, March 14th, 1957. A summary of an intensive. At this time, we do have a summary of processes which roll from bottom to top, which do make a very broad application of CCH. CCH is still CCH, but you still have a ladder of processes which start at the bottom and which go to the top. Now, in the interest of cracking every case you walk into, I could recommend the processes which I am about to give you, since all of them have been pretty darn well tested, particularly at the lower end, which is the important end. I don't want people going out of this unit getting failures on cases. Now, I don't say that you have to win on every case you process. I don't say that you have to win on every case you process. That's not a vital necessity. If you were to process somebody, for instance, who was the enemy of your country, and you knew it, and so forth, and if you couldn't sit there like a good old auditor and just bin him right straight on in down to the last rung and out the bottom, I'd be disappointed in you. You're not on a particular kick if you have to make everything well which comes your way. But when you intend to help somebody, I will not feel that you have been well trained unless you are able to help that person positively and immediately, so he will have subjective reality upon the help you have given him. That's one thing to help somebody, and another thing to have him know it. But if you really help him a thing, he knows it. So you could practically remodel somebody's body and they'd never find it out. Now, all of the techniques which I'm going to list here are all in the direction of his finding it out. He'll find out about it. It is sometimes more therapeutic to let somebody find out about it than to heal some physical condition which he has. He may have some other use for that physical condition, and you may merely rob him of that use and make him rather upset about it. I'll give you the most elementary example of this. You have somebody with a toothache. Well, you have to say hello to the tooth, and have the tooth say okay, and have the tooth say hello to him, and have him say okay to the tooth. You've got to change the category of his toothache. You'll get a subjective reality on it. He may never have a toothache again in that tooth. He may have one in the next 4 or 5 days. But the difference is he knows that you just sat there casually with a pleasant look on your face, and you just changed the tooth all over the place. And he has, then, subjective reality. So, the first and foremost thing necessary is subjective reality. Now, we did not necessarily desert Dianetics, but we exceeded Dianetics merely because Dianetics, far from always, gave a subjective reality. Many people were audited in Dianetics and changed all over the place without gaining any subjective reality of any kind, which is the most maddening thing that can happen to an auditor. Why, this old babe has been sitting in a wheelchair for Lord knows when, and you ran out Grandma sitting in a wheelchair, and you ran out all the facsimiles of Grandma beating her, and the next doggone thing, you know, she was pianola, very heavy facsimiles, and they just sort of ran off when you told them to. The next thing you know, she's walking around the house doing her housework, and you say, well, you wait for her to say, you know, well, thank you, or something. Instead of that, you hear from her son.
And her son says, what have you done to my mother?
Why? Well, she feels terrible these days.
You say, what's the matter? She's walking around the house and doing her work again, isn't she?
Yes, but that was due to some Oreozone therapy that was given her by Dr. Shoot in the Butts.
Here's a critical amount of uncertainty and randomity. It even enters the uncertainty. Excuse me, ladies. Now, that's a word in the military. It means where you run up targets. And it means something to you to be on the certainty of knowing you have been in communication with somebody. And all that told you was that you weren't in communication with somebody. It's an invalidation just due to the fact that you thought you were. Now, that is an auditing failure. Preclear failed to get subjective reality on the situation. Therefore, it was an auditing failure. You see that? You changed him all around, you healed him, and so forth. So therefore, we no longer, as we did in Dianetics, talk much about healing. We would rather talk about subjective reality. Did you reach the guy? And by reaching him, could he then reach life? Therefore, we're talking today about ability, that you can heal people. Is a laughable simplicity. Oh, I know this illness is very serious. And in times when I have been ill, I have considered it extremely serious. I've been certain that this was the most important thing that was going on in the world. There might have been congresses and continents going underneath the sea, but the most important thing about it was is that I couldn't get up. That was important. The funny part of it is, in the workaday life of an auditor, if he were to stress healing, and nothing but healing, he would be living and telling a lie. He's stressing, really, subjective reality on being able to reach life. Does this person know he can live better now? He doesn't know that. Why the devil with it? Now, one of the ways you reach them, by the way, is to teach groups. You teach groups, and you'll find yourself way ahead. You just audit one individual at a time, and you don't make it near as fast. And you see, you give them an educational attitude toward life. You don't let them discover it or find it out through auditing, which sometimes takes some time. That way you get out, you are communicating further. So a goal in Scientology, which is much greater than a goal of healing or some such goal as that, or making him more sane, or any of these oddball goals that were part and parcel of Dianetics. They really are not there in Scientology. Subjective reality on existence is a very good statement of what you're trying to do with Preclear. If he had a good enough subjective reality on communication and existence and life, he wouldn't have a great deal of difficulty after that. You see, he thinks life is terrible, and it isn't. That is the big joke. And all of the odds are in your favor. You just give a person a subjective reality on one thing, and he's apt to have a tremendous change occur in his livingness. In Dianetics, we change their health and their bodies. And in Scientology, we change their livingness. And believe me, those are terribly different. At first, when I changed over, it was more or less an expedient for various reasons. There was a great deal of expediency in terms of legalities and that sort of thing in view. But before we'd gone down the line very far on observation of the awareness of awareness unit, as it is called in Dianetics, we found out we were in a brand new subject. And this was a brand new subject. This was what we were trying to get aware of. And it wasn't just aware of mental image pictures. It was aware of existence at large. And we found out that all we had to do was get him aware of it, and he'd find out it wasn't awful. The fact that he isn't aware of it is all that makes it awful. You realize that pain is simply a withheld communication entangling with an effort to. That's all. It's a must reach, can't reach situation. Must withdraw, can't withdraw. Any such combination of a conflict. See, we have two forces which are forced against each other, and that little ridge of turbulence and so forth, at one level on the tone scale is pain, and on another level is a feeling known as insanity. And if you run a burnout on anybody very thoroughly, you'll find both pain and a feeling of real insanity turning on in the same injury. Let's just get it burned all over, you know, anything. It's a funny emotion, but it's a harmonic on pain. There are probably several other harmonics which develop into other things, all of which are born on the basis of a person who's trying to get away from something and must get in touch with it, see, at the same time. And he's trying to get in touch with it, but he must get away from it. And this sort of a situation has just got him completely stuck. But it gives him emotions, and it gives him sensations. And all of these are bad, as far as he's concerned. Normal life processes, there are all these sensations of pain, insanity, and so on. He doesn't like these things. Well, he's, again, just a consideration. But the mechanics of it do add up to the fact that his difficulty is failure to communicate with. And he adds it up, failure to get away from. And making him get away from it doesn't cure it. Awful important. Getting him away from a hot stove doesn't cure hot stoves. You understand that? Now, you can hurt a body. You can hurt a body if it has a thing in it. But who's being hurt? Well, the body is being disfigured. I don't even know that it's the body that keeps the disfigure there. Because the thing that is feeling in the body is the Thetan, the awareness unit. And he then is connected to it, and then he says, the body hurts. The devil, it does. He's got a ridge someplace anchored in the body, which gives him back sensation. And if he holds it there solidly enough, it will aberrate or mischange the shape of the body at that point. As far as bodies are concerned, they didn't have thetans in them. You probably throw them up against the wall at a velocity of 50 miles an hour, and they probably bounce back and bounce off the floor, and you'd stand them up, and they probably look the same as before. They have to be held in a state of change before that is manifest. It's a very peculiar thing. The source of the sensation is the thetan who is getting the sensation. And therefore, you are studying a thetan. You're not studying a body. And as soon as you realize this 100%, you have a pain in your foot. That's fine. I have a pain in my foot. Boy, that's so true. You might add up something by saying, I have a pain in my mocked up foot. But if you said, my body's foot hurts, you might feel that you should say hurts the body. But the body's not feeling it. You are. My body's foot hurts me. No, it doesn't. Some ridge you have in connection with the body's foot is backflowing and hurting you. You got that? In other words, the thetan causes the pain, which is that. Bodies don't hurt. But thetans in contact with bodies, experiencing a certain thing, do certain things, which build up certain ridges, which cause a backflow, which hurts the thetan who put them there in the first place. And that is pain and healing and disappointment and upset and degradation and all the rest of it. Now, people go around blaming their bodies, and that's a misownership, so these things have continuance. All you got to do is say, body hurts. Well, it does, but that's a misownership enough to continue a pain. Do you understand that? So a person's subjective reality on life must include an ability to communicate, an ability to control, and an ability to have and let other things have too. Now, if he can get that subjective reality in a very, very unlimited sense, he, of course, is strictly OT, out the top. He's just a beautiful condition. He's got a theoretically unlimited sense of what he can communicate with, what he can control, what could control him, what he could have, what other things could have. And if he could do all this, he certainly would have enough imagination to make a game out of it. Now, what do we have then? What do we have as a problem here? We have the problem of subjective reality. You want a monkey with mist?
I can assure you, you can change nest. If you want to change bodies, you can change bodies. If you want to do this or that or the other thing, you can do it. But that is not what you're doing with auditing. You're doing those things quite incidentally. It is not some dodge to dodge away from the American Medical Association, the members of which we respect, or dodge away from the law or anything when we say we don't heal. No, this would give a misapprehension to somebody. He brings this beautiful service facsimile that he needs so desperately in to find out if it's still good enough to stick. And he lugs that into you and says, you heal it. Well, in the first place, he was the basic author of this thing. And in addition to that, he's the only one that could do anything about it, even if you ran a procedure of one kind or another on him. And yet, his irresponsibility, which is a key factor in his case, is such that the thing could heal up and he'd never find out about it, and where would that put you? Well, why don't you buy a junk heap someplace and repair all the clocks you find in it or something like that? It's a good hobby. But it's not improving anybody's livingness, don't you see? So you're not in the business of healing. That you heal is incidental and understood, so what? Of course, people very often are taken by surprise when they were 5 years of age. They wanted a toothache, and when they're 52, they get it. It's a bit of a calm lag, but they manage it. Now they're very surprised, and they wonder where that dead toothache came from. Well, all right, you can take it away from them. But unless you take it away from them on a basis of their subjective reality, you haven't done anything for or to their livingness, and they will never find out about it. You will simply be some kind of a swami sitting on cloud 19, and nobody can touch you, and you get the idea. I mean, that's a total disassociation as far as you're concerned. You move off and become a separate clique from existence, and existence goes east, and you go west, and you get the idea? It's not what you're doing. But if you move in and give people a subjective reality on what you're doing, then they will find out they can communicate. They will find out many things. And of course, if you found an enemy of your country, you could also teach him that he couldn't possibly communicate. All you've got to do is ask him this beautiful process, tell me something that you could disagree with. Tell me something you don't have to go into agreement with. Naturally, being a rebellious frame of mind, he bought himself right out the bottom. Cut communication. Now cut communication again. Good, that's fine. Oh, you say your feet are hurting now. Well, that's to be expected. Cut communication again. Oh, your hands are on fire. Well, cut communication again. Cut communication again. Pretty soon he goes out at 10, you dump him in the garbage can. I mean, you get the idea. But if you're getting of a subjective reality, the only thing you've got to do is show him that he can have, that he can control, and that he can communicate. And those are the only things that you're interested in. And you just show him he can control things, he can communicate, and he can have things. And also other people can have things too, and he can also deny them. And he can be controlled, and other people can control him, and he can communicate. And that's subjective reality on the plus side. Because you can also give him a subjective reality that he better damn well not communicate with something. I'll show you one way to do that. I had a very interesting idea the other day. I thought of all of the senseless fights that a person fights on the back track, you know. Not going into parasitology, but he fights a lot of fights. And many of these fights were not really of his own choosing. He was busy going toward target A, and target B jumped up and insisted that it be fought before he reached target A. And therefore, to some degree, for years, he's still on the road to fighting target A, but he's just never fought, you see. This misdirection of one's fighting propensities and proclivities is quite interesting as a mechanism for aberration. If I was going to the library, you say, well, why go to the library? Here's a book here. It's just a tiny shadow of this. You misdirect his intention. See that? All right, so you intended to go find Jacques Lemoyne and cut his stinking head off for running away with your ever-loving chauffeur or something. And you're all set, see? You're going over there and you're going to get a hold of Jacques. And the next thing you know, you walk out the front door and here's Gaspard Leroux. And Gaspard Leroux is mad at you for not having paid your
tailor bill or for wearing pink tights or something of the sort. You find yourself behind the church busily dueling with Gaspard LaRue, and you should have been dueling with the other fellow, and you get them confused about halfway through the fight, and you don't know the devil you're fighting. You got the idea? Well, this misdirection is quite interesting. Quite interesting as a mechanism. And it is the mechanism that life plays with you. Plays with you rather consistently. Misdirects your attention. Intentions. Now, your intentions are to go to A, and you find yourself wound up at B, and you never do get to A. Now, to some degree, everybody's still going toward all the A's they ever started toward, but never canceled out. You got it? Now, that gets them into a confusion. Now, in order to overcome that confusion, you merely have to rehabilitate their subjective reality of what they're going at. You tell them to go to the wall, they know they're going to the wall. So you may find they arrive there. There was no Gaspard LaRue that suddenly jumped up and challenged them to a duel halfway to the wall. That you stumble over a chair in the dark is a painful, nest-level reaction of this same mechanism. You didn't intend to connect with the chair. You were going to the telephone. Understand? And the surprise, the shock, the cave-in of anchor points, the introversion, so forth, that occurs simply comes from being misrooted. So your bricklayer, positively rooted, finds out that he can have a definite goal target and that he can arrive somewhere in the universe. All of your bricklayers are trying to arrive. And that is simply this mechanism of Gaspard jumping up and fighting the duel when you were trying to get over there to Jock's LeMoyne. He's trying to arrive. He's still trying to get to Jock's LeMoyne. He's not trying to get anywhere in auditing. So he'll tell you all sorts of ridiculous things about his goals in auditing, and you couldn't care less. That's for sure. His real goal in auditing is to finish the duel at 1621 with one of the Cardinal's guards. He's still trying to do that, and he's sitting in an auditing room now. If you let him monkey around too much, he just drives the session in the direction of old target A's all the way up and down the line. He never gets anywhere. Your goal is not to let him arrive at target A. This duel with Jock's LeMoyne might have been very interesting. It might have changed the history of the world because the chauffeur turned out to be the next dictator of Paris or something of the sort. It might have done all sorts of things, but it never happened. And therefore, auditing him on every duel he has missed is auditing him in the direction of no communication, no reality, reverse control, no havingness. He never did have a dead body on his hand named Jock's LeMoyne. So a more generalized repair is indicated, and that repair is of his subjective reality on life and livingness. And that is best phrased under communication, control, and havingness. All you have to do is work with those three factors, and you will change your subjective reality, providing you can find an entrance point. No case falls outside these. There aren't sudden cases that turn up with dyspeptic schizonoia. Which is a new disease or something in the mind that you don't find somebody lying outside of that. But you do find people that apparently cannot be reached easily on any reality level. It becomes your job to reach them. It's rather easy to do if you know how. If you're a well-trained auditor, you can do it. If you have confidence in what you're doing and you do it, then you'll find out that it's rather easy to do. Your training is poor. If your knowledge of the situation is rocky here and there, if you have a great many reservations about the numbers of dyspeptic schizonoias that you may run into and are not covered by the situation, then every case you audit will be something that's not quite covered by the situation, and you're still trying to get to pre-clear Q and finding yourself auditing pre-clear G. You get the idea? Just to that degree, you're not reaching your target. You're never auditing the pre-clear you should be auditing, you feel, or something of the sort. The pre-clear always lies outside the bounds of the situation. Now, the pre-clear's case or tone does lie below, in all too many cases, although a rather small percentage, possibly a percentage no higher than 5 or 6% of cases
lay below the skill of techniques and understanding of Scientology. Either just this small proportion, but those loomed high in your mind because they were the invalidated ones. It is not at all aberrative to be an auditor. It is not aberrative at all to audit unless one's intentions are to make somebody better, and then the person gets no better. In other words, failure, failure, failure. You have a certain feeling that you should be able to do certain things, and then you cannot do them. Now, that is a severe setback to a person, and it does become a bit aberrative. Not for anything that auditing itself can't handle, but in the long span of living amongst men, you find out that would tend to cave you in. But nothing else much would. Even knowing it about it would make it less of a cave-in factor, you understand, but you say, well, I should have helped him out there today, and I don't know what I did, but I flopped. Tried to unspin that person, and the person's still spinning. Make excuses of one kind or another. And we aren't quite as enthusiastic on the next one we tackle. Get the idea? All right, now I'll have failed my mission completely as far as you're concerned. I leave you liable at this stage of the game to any of that liability. Telling you at the same time that you do not have to be totally effective. You don't have to be. There is nobody saying that under no circumstances will you ever audit a case that you will flop on. There are too many other angles of flop that you have no control over. I'll tell you an interesting flop an auditor had one time. He got a hold of a fellow who was out in California, of course. And got a hold of a fellow and gave him a session, and was running an engram. Gave him a rather good session, quickly responded well, and that sort of thing. It was a great shock to the auditor, because the next day, the preclear didn't appear for the appointment. The auditor phoned up to find out what had happened to the preclear. Well, the preclear was in the hospital. The auditor phoned me in a panic on the subject that this technique hadn't worked. Well, in view of the fact it was just standard engram running, didn't seem to me like it would have gone too far off the line. So I suggested to the auditor that he go to the hospital and see the preclear. Well, he didn't think that would do any good, and he had the idea, of course, of the steps being mobbed by police because he's damaged somebody. One of these fellows is rather timid about doing anything to or for or even talking to human beings. He went to the hospital, and the fellow lying there had been shot. He'd come home whistling, and he's very cheerful, and he talked to his wife for a few minutes, and she went to the dresser drawer and pulled a gat out and drilled him. Well, they took him to the hospital and plugged him up and put a cork in the hole and released him back into circulation, and the auditor went on with the sessions. But that gave that auditor an awfully bad time for a few hours. Now, less dramatically, but outside influences very often influence auditing to a tremendous degree. A fellow goes home, and ordinarily his wife has been in high spirits, and everything's fine, but she happens to have just cleaned the house from attic to cellar, has been plagued all day by bill collectors, and she doesn't feel well anyhow. And he comes in and he says, "Boys, I certainly feel wonderful." That's, of course, signal for a fight. Next time you see him, why, he feels horrible. And if you didn't inquire into it, why, you would be left in a bit of a mystery band. You'd say, "Well, now, let's see. We ran, keep it from going away on two objects on this fellow, and 24 hours, 12 hours later, we find him caved in." And you consider these things connected data. You think they're related. And they very often are not related. That you must keep in mind. And the best way to keep it in mind is to introduce into the beginning of every auditing session a coverage of the time the preclear has been away from you. since the end of the last session. You understand? Even if you're auditing them just once a week, let's cover the time. Let's find out anything that has occurred in the interim. Naturally, some fellow who goes home and finds the whole family has been burned up, and they're all dead now, and has to go down to the morgue and identify the bodies, and all that sort of thing, is going to be upset. Yet the funny part of it is he may be so upset, he may go into apathy so thoroughly about it, that he just sits there in apathy and he never mentions it. Very often the dramatic ones are the ones that just pass right straight on by the boards. The fellow was kind of apathetic anyhow, and any incident that occurred went below the level of being able to have a problem. So we get on our rundown on processes here. We get the examination of the situation without too much communication this early in the game. We get an examination of the situation to discover if he's run into any problems of any kind since the last session, and we evaluate whether they should be important to him or not. We don't let him evaluate this fact. We don't evaluate it by telling him anything. We evaluate it by deciding whether or not to run a problem of comparable magnitude to the present time problem. We consider that his mother falling into the washing machine and being ground to bits or something like this was serious, and he doesn't think it is. We may feel that running his mother in any way is too serious to fool with. Or we may feel that he is in good enough shape to run this problem comparable magnitude so as to clear up his attention. Because yanking his attention suddenly from a direction he is going in onto something else can actually turn on somatics, confuse him, upset him. And I've seen a preclear, 2 days deep in an intensive, suddenly drop and stay there just because the auditor tried to get him back into session without ever addressing the possibility of a present time problem. Now, this is an old one. It is creaky. It's really something a fellow ought to do at the beginning of every session he gives anybody. Something like, what's been going on lately is a very good gambit anyway. What's life been doing to you? What's been happening? Any excitement? Anything of this character has a tendency to open the gun just with two-way communication. And if there is, you can normally tell it by the physical reaction of the preclear if he doesn't tell you. I'll give you an example of this. You've got to get good on observing, you know. You've just got to get awfully good on it. You should realize the misbehaviors of breath, pulse, and things of this character are very plainly written on the preclear. They're practically engraved by a tattoo artist across his forehead. He's sitting there, he's always come to you neat. And today he comes to you and he is dirty, unshaven, looks ragged. And you're just going to start the session on the assumption that it's this change of this magnitude does not have any significance in it. Well, you're as blind as a bat, some auditor, if you don't notice such things. All right, you say, well, it's been an excitement in the last 24 hours, you know, just to get the go rolling. And the fellow says, no. Which do you believe? You always believe the side. You see, you're in better shape than he is. And you're certainly in better shape than he is about his own life, because you can observe him directly, and he can only observe himself subjectively. You see that? So therefore, what he says to you is his adjudication of the situation, and you're the expert. Got that? Your adjudication of the situation is more valid than his, and his spoken adjudication of it very seldom should have much validity with regard to it. Because a person can drop below apathy. And with that discovery of below apathy, although we knew about it all the time, we never knew how to use it to this degree, we realized that a person can be below not only the level of having reaction to a serious situation, which should be serious to him. That's all a criminal
is, by the way, somebody who goes around doing seriously injurious things and is not aware that they are injurious at all. He just does them. Not only can he be in the kind of condition whereby the problem is below apathy, but he can be below apathy on the total subject of all problems. In other words, you can run into a preacher who cannot have a problem, who does not have a problem, there are no problems in life, and brother, when you run into one of those boys, hold your hat. That's wild. You've made him a lot better off when you get him into a situation where he can have a problem, no matter how minor or major. That's a bad condition. We went into a business in England one time and audited everybody on that business staff. And nobody in that whole office had any problems of any kind. We knew about this mechanism. We'd known about this mechanism for some little time. And it had become so observed, so well observed by the staff auditors there, that it was just remarkable the depth of sigh or the wise look that appeared on the faces of the staff auditors. They all told me in unison, "We just checked it over amongst ourselves, and you know there's nobody in that business has any problem of any kind." Whew. What are we supposed to do, Ron?
How far south?
That's what it meant to me. So, your adjudication of the situation is best. Nothing much happened. I went home. Wife is sick in bed. Is she sick in bed often? Well, no. It's the first time she's been sick in bed in a long time. Would you have to do anything about it? Well, no. Was that much of a problem to you? No. Now, you have to decide whether or not you want to tackle his wife. This becomes another subject. You want to tackle the subject in his session of his wife? You want to get problems of comparable magnitude to his wife? You want to stir this up and go on this line? Do you want to do this? Is it best that you do this? These are all points of judgment. Those are points of judgment. You have to be able to make that judgment. And their judgment is quite important. That's the most important part of a session, by the way. Because that judges what you're going to do about it, whatever it is. Now, a fellow who comes in has speech impediment, and you say, well, I've got to fix up his speech impediment before we can get on with auditing. Why don't you just go cut your throat, huh? If somebody has something wrong with his mechanical ability to speak, he's got so much wrong with him on the subject of communication that you'll have to start south of zero before you can do anything for his stuttering. You know, you can practically fix your two fingers in a stammer's eyes just like that and say, soup, you will no longer stutter. Awake. In some 10% of the cases, he just stops stuttering right there at that point. You know you could do that? Well, if it's that easy, certainly an auditor can do it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah? You mean you've driven him down to a point now where he can't even speak on his own determinism? He has an hypnotic implant now which stands between him and everything he utters? You must have put him in apathy about everything that he knew was impossible to talk about. He knows he's not supposed to talk, and now, in order to do this, you probably put all of his speech on a circuit or something of the sort. You watch that boy as the days go by. You'll find out that he's in a trance. He continues to be in that trance. Oh, it's very easy to reach by hypnotism because the person is 9/10 hypnotized in the first place. All you got to do is make a fast pass and he goes sound asleep. Bang. If you're a good hypnotist, your problem is how to keep him from falling on the floor, not how to get him, cure him of stammering with an hypnotic suggestion. You haven't cured him of stammering at all. You have entered a new, better talking circuit into his anatomy. In other words, you've got him one circuit further down the scale. And that's what you've done to him. All right, this is again a matter of judgment. But the judgment in that particular case is, don't audit these obvious
oddities when they lie in the high zone of communication. When something is a communication defect, you better leave it alone. Just leave it alone. And it'll iron out eventually, because they're the last stage. Man, when a fellow's communication lines break down, everything else has broken down. When his internal comm lines are such that they're no longer mechanically perfect from where he is, Lord knows where that would be, 2 inches away to his eyes or something like this, leave it alone. That's too serious a problem for you to tackle. And that's why auditors have bad luck changing people's perceptions when they tackle them. They say, well, I'm going to audit this pre-clear, take off this pre-clear's glasses. I'll tell you something, the way I look at it, it's quite different. I say, I'm going to audit this pre-clear, and I audit some basic process, and when the pre-clear's eye color or expression changes, I know I've done something to his eyes, but I never talked about his eyes. I've done something to his eyes, but I never talked about his eyes. You see that? You ought to add glasses, you seldom get anywhere. That's for sure. All right. Well, where do you go then? This is a session about techniques, isn't it? I mean, we're talking about techniques here in this lecture. Well, we're sure talking about techniques, aren't we? When to use them and where? Well, we'll find out that every psyche seems to go on the following scale. They seem to go from a below zero unawareness as a thetan up to total awareness as a thetan. And in between there is just awareness as a body. Now, awareness as a thetan ceases above awareness as a body. So you get down into the zones of body awareness. And that's about where you start. You have any questions about where to start with the case? You start on body awareness. What can this fellow be aware of? It'll be something to do with the body. We'll take a catatonic schizo. This is the unsolvable case. We're not curing anybody, but we do feel that this person's ability is impaired. Catatonic schizophrenia. The person lies there day and night, never moves, barely breathes. Breath hardly registers on a mirror when held to lips. Hardly any pulse. Once upon a time called suspended animation. Person's insane, or in trance, or unconscious, or suffering from a fractured skull. We don't care, but that is the condition, whether it's racked up on medical or psychiatric grounds. We don't care what that diagnosis is. To us, this means just one thing. Doesn't mean the person's insane. Doesn't mean the person is suffering from injury. That is not our business. Our business is bringing the awareness of awareness unit into a greater subjective reality on life. Well, now that person is a long way out. Somebody else can treat this person's body. Somebody else can treat this person's insanity. And I'm interesting. Somebody else can treat their insanity because it's unfair to be treated. What are you going to do? What would you do? There is the most extreme case there is, because you're not going out to the cemetery and having any luck whistling back dead bodies, whistling back spirits into dead bodies after both the spirit and the dead body have been full of formaldehyde. You're not going to have much luck at this. Although I dare say one of these days some Scientologist is going to have a penchant and an expertness in whistling up spirits. Somebody be walking down the street, this would be very esoteric, I'm sure. Somebody be walking down the street and the Scientologist has got the curve on being able to whistle them out of their heads and have them appear in the middle of the crystal ball, you know, as another head or something. Somebody's going to solve this someday. This is a gang, you know. Have trumpets blowing all over the place. I think you could probably hypnotize a thetan into doing almost anything if you went right about it, but he wouldn't know he was doing it, and he wouldn't know he had done it, and so that wouldn't have done much for the thetan, would it have? All right. Here's the extreme case. We consider that south.
And your action in that case is evidently indicated in this wise. Take some portion of the person's body, tell them to move it toward a certain goal or destination, and pick up that part, move it to that destination, and then thank them for doing it. This violation of their causation probably is annoyance. We'll get to them sooner or later. You got it? Here's catatonic Stips lying there, Stips bored. Yeah. Physical level below apathy. Take the hand. Take a look at the hand, rather. You'd say, all right, I want you, you would say this, just, you know, not trying to shout in their ear or something like that. You'd just say, now what? Tap them on the shoulder, something like that. Say, no, I'll probably utter their name. I want you to reach over the side of your bed and touch the spring. All right, that's good. Now, and you pick up the hand, and you move it over the side of the bed and touch the springs, and you say, that's fine, that's good. Now move your hand back and put it to the side, and you move the hand back and put it to the side. Got it? Say, that's fine, that's good. No data exists on how much it would take or something like this, because this is, we know it works in all other departments, we know it would work in that department. I'm just giving you that particular case because that's obviously that far south. We've taken people who are comatose and so forth. And the final analysis, what we were doing was trying to establish communication. Well, we found out that we established communication by exerting control. And that's the formula from there on for some distance up. Establish communication by exerting control. We get our next process above that, which is just a control process. The same process, ambulatory. And this is written to people who are apparently wide awake. I've talked about sailors during the war. There's hardly anybody who was in combat areas very long in the last two wars who will not tell you of this happening to them, particularly if they were in a responsible position of some sort. Being whistled up to an emergency and waking up a few minutes afterwards, or being asleep and suddenly rising to a non-existent emergency. That's very interesting. A fellow has been in so many emergencies that he suddenly leaps out of his bunk. He's lying alongside of a dock in San Francisco, and he leaps out of his bunk and he rushes up to the signal bridge and looks aft and sees that a ship is dead aft them, of course it is, they're both tied to the dock, and says we're about to be rammed, and screams into the speaking tube and throws on all the engine room telegraphs. Everybody's ashore, there's nobody on board. Full speed ahead. A lot of fellas have done that. They were sound asleep and acting. And that's what either situation amounts to. And there's plenty of people walking up and down the street and driving cars and apparently carrying on a job who are sound asleep and acting. And you audit them a little while, and you audit them on these buses, and they wake up. When they wake up, they're liable to do something strange, like rush up to a non-existent signal bridge and start screaming down the speaking tube to go full speed ahead, see? And then they look around rather puzzledly, and it's possible for a Thetan to be totally out and be running on machinery, and when he wakes up to find himself in another situation entirely. And it's something that you'd have to experience to believe. Almost anybody, however, who was in combat zone sooner or later got tired enough so that this sort of thing occurred. He went enough out of present time, he was shocking enough, he was bad enough fed with all the stakes that were being shipped from the United States. According to the papers, there was nothing but huge refrigerator ships all over the east and west coast that did nothing but bring all the stakes straight to the front lines. I kept asking civilians the later end of the war and so forth how they liked their stakes and so forth. We haven't had any meat since this war started.
ship it all to you boys.
Who?
I don't know where all the steaks went. I think the butter, I know where the butter went. It went to Russia and Greece tank feds. That's where all the butter went that everybody was short on. It was on rationing. But people who are in an underfed condition and people who are overtired have had this happen to them. They found themselves moving, walking, and acting, and have suddenly awakened and found out that they were doing this. And it's with great surprise that they discovered it. They said, then what was making me move up to that point? Well, what was making the move up to that point is all the machinery that 9/10 of the time makes the move anyhow. See, they were moving anyhow. This machinery moves the most of the time, but they're aware of the fact they're being moved, and they have some co-authorship in it. But here they were moving without their consent or authorship or even awareness. And there you find a sort of a mental catatonia. Person isn't there at all. Now that would be a no subjective reality ambulatory. No subjective reality on anything. All right? When they come out of catatonia, they would then go up to a necessity of just a heavy control, 8C, which disregarded everything the pre-clear dived off into and simply put them through a walkabout. You see the wall. Yes, the fellow says, I see the wrong, you say. Good, you say. You don't ever wait for him to tell you that he did. You're going to hang yourself up in this. One thing you're probably doing wrong, or will do wrong, it's very interesting, is I'll bet you wait for the pre-clear to signify. Devil with it. You just get over that. If he's a signifying type pre-clear, that's fine. You're lucky. But if that pre-clear is not signifying, you going to stop auditing? That's just another way the pre-clear has of stopping you. He's denying you communication. You say, look at the wall. He doesn't look at the wall. You turn his jaw over so his eyes will face in the direction of the wall. And then you wait for him to say, yes, I see the wall. Yeah, no. He never has to say a word in this type of heavy control 8C that I'm talking about right now. He never has to say a word. He can be chattering a blue streak about the beauties of the pigeons on the grass. We don't care. We just don't care whether he talks or doesn't talk or if he says he sees the wall or doesn't see the wall or anything of the sort. We can tell when he originates. It's perfectly all right. If he originates and he's found out something surprising, for heaven's sakes, acknowledge it. Be interested in what happened to him. If it happened to him, don't be so confoundedly interested in machinery. It'll run day and night. It's like going down to the record store and putting on record after record and so on, and then say, isn't it nice? Isn't that an intelligent phonograph? And we've just run a heavy control instance over here. Just run a heavy control instance. Girl turns sideways, begins to vomit while being audited. Auditor says, well, I don't care about that. Auditor did this very crudely, by the way, by saying, I don't care about that. You know, you don't have to do that. In other words, he said something else. He might as well have omitted that. It was actually a blunder. Turns sideways, starts to vomit. He moved over, pulled her head straight, squared her up and said, I'm not talking about that. That's a matter. I want to talk to you about it. I want you to look at the wall. Good. And then she got her heart trouble turned on and then headache turned on, I think. And each case, why, wham, wham. In each case, he said, well, we don't care about that. That's not what we're doing. All I want you to do is look at that wall. Well, he was talking. He was paying enough attention to it to talk about it. That's not heavy control. Person turns sideways to vomit. Just pull their head back, let them look at the wall, and say, well, you see it there? Well, that's good. Go on through it. Don't talk about their vomiting. To that tiny degree, they have attracted the auditor's attention. See, you wouldn't do this, but if a person said, wow, about 20 facsimiles just flew off in front of my face or something like that, or gee, there's a great big picture of my father. And the auditor paid no attention to that whatsoever and didn't acknowledge that communication anyway. Pre-clear could get pretty apathetic. be quite upset.
That's the preclear. The preclear all of a sudden woke up out of this dream and daze and said, here I sit with a picture staring me in the face, or, you know. Hey, you know that wall has now got 12 feet thicker? You at least say, for God's sake, say, no kidding. No fooling. They are very interesting. Something on this order. Preclear said, you know, I had an uncle once, and he used to look at walls, too. He was walking all around the barnyard all the time. He used to look at the walls of the barn. He used to go around and feel the walls of the barn. I know what you're doing, because he goes around and feels the walls of the barn all the time. You know, he's in the barnyard, and used to lead all the animals in the barnyard, and used to take them around, and they see the walls and so forth. And if you say, yes, good, that's fine, you just give him the needle ahead of your sheriff. So it's just more spin on the record. You pay a bit of attention to it. You don't say, yes, that's fine, I know all about that. Tell him that, you know. You just act as though there's no speech going on, because that's the truth. Okay. Paying attention to it at all. I'm sure that all of you, sooner or later, if you haven't done it, sooner or later, you'll even have the tendency to say, damn it, what are we talking about this barnyard for? Or, we don't care anything about a barnyard, we're auditing, and so forth, and so on. Well, that's definitely out of order. Definitely out of order. Now, we go from there up into the solids, the graduation towards solids. That goes through heavy HC octave. Walk over to the wall, tell me how it ought to be. Touch it, you know, tell me how it ought to be. So that'll get him to solids in a hurry. It'll get him up into connectedness, which is the next one up the line. It'll take him from there to two objects, keep him going away. Two objects, hold it still. Now you can run to HC type, make it more solid. Those are both, those two objects things are sitting down processes. Then we can sit him down again and run then and now solids. If we can't run then and now solids intelligently, we did something wrong up to that point. See, that when PT problem, heavy control HC, and HC ought to be, connectedness, two objects keep from going away, two objects hold it still. You can run HC, make it more solid if you want to walk him around and reestablish your control a little better, and then you can sit him down and run then and now solids. If you can run then and now solids, there is a way to get around it. If you didn't win, there's subjective havingness, remedy of, complete. Takes time, may not be necessary to do it, but that does open immediately to then and now solids if he can't get a mock-up of facsimile. But actually, solid, and the idea of solid is solved and brought about by heavy HC with an octave. Okay, walking, that's a walkabout. That's according to this, your PT problem and then your heavy control HC. Well, now, I told you the catatonic schizo was simply heavy control on some body part, but we don't have to differentiate on these techniques. That is actually sort of an HC. You pick up the person's hand and move it an inch, and feel that, and move your hand back, and so on. That's it. You can call that an HC if you want to. The person can't walk, but you're going to get this person up pretty soon, and don't lose sight of the fact that your next process is walk them. Shove them, push them, move them in some fashion, you know, through some more controlled factors. That's evidently the road up. All right, now we've got then and now solids, and we've got a whole category above that that takes care of the ideas of exteriorization. The only thing, reason why an individual resists exteriorization is they think there's nothing anywhere outside of their head. They think it's some necromancy. The head invents the universe, which is being seen through the eyes. And they think that if they got out here, then they wouldn't see any universe. As a matter of fact, they're so introverted that they actually don't see any universe when they get out here, and that proves it. Actually, the head has everything in common with the wall. That's made out of the same mess that the wall is. And if you were in the wall and you had a couple of peepholes, you'd see the room. And if you're in the head and you got a couple of peepholes, you see the room. Got the idea? Or if you're halfway between the head and the wall, and you got no peepholes at all, and you're in good shape, you see the room. But if you think you can only see inside of the head, or the only universe there is inside of the head, or something of that sort, then you're not going to see any room, even if you're 4 feet from a head or in a wall. So you can always exteriorize somebody, make them look at something else. Exteriorization is on this basis, as this is the only thing there is in here, is here. The only thing that is in here. Satan gets to looking at a screen that the eyes focus on, like people get riveted on television. All kinds of oddities can occur with regard to exteriorization. But the basics, which evidently whip them out and keep them out and straighten them up, head up under one I've already talked to you about, which is walk up somebody and deny that person blank. Now, if he can get salads and he's got his track straight and he's got all this fixed up, then you can always run these mock-ups, these are creative processes, with denial. And you make it a game condition. Mock up somebody, deny him life. I don't care what you put in there. You'll get some result of some kind or another as you go up the line, and there'll always be heady results. You can run significances of any kind you want to and get more or less somewhere. But the basics are, and they run like this. Mock up somebody and deny him or her. A, headingness on psychosomatics. Person has a bum leg. We had mock up people and deny them legs. Then headingness general. Mock up people and deny them headingness. And you'll discover that that is the total mechanism why we introvert people, why we give them problems, why we shoot them with bullets, and everything else is just to deny them headingness. The introversion denies headingness, and that is what one is trying to do to somebody else. All right? The next one up the line is B, which is mark up somebody and deny control. And the next one up the line is C, mark up somebody and deny communication. Now, you can say that in general, or you can say visio, smell, perceptions of various kinds. And you can turn the perceptions inside out. If you've got them that. Now, you can run that process on low-scale people who are not under good control and so forth and lay some eggs. Mess up their bank, do some good, and do some bad. But down low, these processes are not very effective. Now, there's undoubtedly processes above that. There are undoubtedly processes sandwiched in there. But that is what I would run in a full intensive if I were auditing it at this moment. Thank you.